The last case on our calendar today is A23-0449, State of Minnesota versus Keith Allen Paulson. As you know, we are proceeding by Zoom today. Each party will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. You can see the amount of time that you have remaining in the grid view on the Zoom screen. I apologize that we are running a bit late today. We did have some technical difficulties earlier, but they've been resolved, and I assume everything will go okay. If there are any issues, the marshal will stop the clock, and we will make sure that you have your full amount of time. We are recording the oral argument here today. Just a reminder that no other recordings are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I'll ask that counsel for each party introduce yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. With that, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
John Mack for appellant of New London Law. I find this case disturbing. I've probably had 5 or 6 warning shots during the course of my career, and all of them were result short of second degree assault. The problem with this case is that with regard to specific intent, and this is a crime of specific intent, it is a crime based upon circumstantial evidence. This is what the court says in Harris and Fox. To sustain a conviction based upon circumstantial evidence, the reasonable inferences that can be drawn from the circumstances proved as a whole must be consistent with the hypothesis that the accused is guilty and inconsistent with any rational hypothesis except that of guilt. Well, there's a rational hypothesis short of guilt here, namely that he was simply trying to get their attention. And there's plenty of evidence of that. Not only did he testify to it, but it was clear that the back was turned at the time of the shot. It's clear that my client was the one that made the notice to law enforcement. It's clear that at least one and perhaps two of the alleged victims in this case said they were not scared. There was no intention to injure, and the shot was fired into the air. The victims did not claim to law enforcement initially that my client had done anything. In fact, they did not go to law enforcement. It seems to me, therefore, that this is an excellent case for something other than 602-221 and 602-222. This case was badly tried. I'm not making an ineffective assistance of counsel claim here because I think that'll be something that will be something of a separate motion. But for heaven's sakes, read, for example, the motion for downward departure. It's almost illiterate. And it seems to me that their case being tried itself was very problematical in this case. It should have wound up, obviously, in my judgment, being handled as a discharge of firearm or a discharge of firearm in a municipality, and it wasn't.
Mr. Mack, just to be clear, are you challenging the admissibility of the evidence or the sufficiency of the evidence?
The sufficiency of the evidence. I argued in one of my briefs relative to the admissibility of the evidence, too, but Mr. Stockmeyer has convinced me that I may have been wrong on that one.
And with regard to the sufficiency of the evidence, you're arguing that there's a rational alternative hypothesis because the shot was fired into the air?
Right. And some of the other factors based upon it, not just fired in the air, but fired when backs were turned, fired when at least two of the people said they weren't frightened, and the other issues relating to the sufficiency of the evidence. I noticed that Mr. Stockmeyer objected that I did not challenge the sufficiency of the evidence, but I think it's perfectly clear on page 6 of my initial brief that I did. An assault is to be adjudicated from the point of view of the alleged assailant. Second degree assault fear is a crime of specific intent. If an act is done without intent to cause fear, then it is not culpable, even if the victim fears and even if a reasonable victim would feel fear. And I'm quoting State versus Fleck on that one. So it's pretty obvious that I was challenging specific intent, and therefore I'm challenging the specific intent as an element of the sufficiency of the evidence. It seems to me that the rational hypothesis in this case probably was stronger for the idea that it was a warning shot. Warning shots are something that law enforcement is told at the very beginning, hey, don't do it. So when we're dealing with people who are sophisticated law enforcement people, they may not know that warning shots are illegal. And my client, who has a sub-high school education, is 70 years old and is not particularly bright, isn't going to know that that's an assault. He may know that he shouldn't do it, but there are plenty of at least three statutes that condemn what he does short of.
So is it your argument that a reasonable person would not feel fear hearing a rifle going off?
A reasonable person might feel fear, but the issue here is from the point of view of the assailant, not from the point of view of the assailed. You can put in evidence, so that's what Mr. Stockmeyer convinced me of, that there was actual fear on the part of at least one of the victims, but that isn't the legal standard for charging the defendant. The defendant's point of view is important here.
And isn't the report of the victims of this shot, isn't that relevant to whether there's sufficient circumstantial evidence to establish the specific intent?
I'm not sure I understand that.
In other words, if the victims had laughed and said, oh, isn't that funny? You know, well, that might be relevant as to what his intent was, because they would agree with him that he didn't intend to hurt them. But if they're basically jumping and running because they think that he's going to shoot them after firing one shot already, isn't that relevant to the issue of whether this man had specific intent?
I agree it's relevant. Mr. Stockmeyer convinced me of that. But it's not conclusive, and it does not relate to the issue of whether there's a rational hypothesis inconsistent with that. So the fact that they felt fear may be introducible, but it certainly does not bear directly on the question of whether or not my client intended to cause fear in them rather than to get their attention. Remember, we've got a tractor running. He can't hear much of anything. He couldn't shout over it. So he has to do something to get their attention. Now, it would have been probably better if he'd walked up to them and said, I think you're a thief, but that might have wound up into a fish fight. The second issue that I want to deal with here is durational and dispositional departure. I know that the court very rarely overturns a district court with regard to departures, but the problem with this case is it is a virtually automatic prison sentence, 3-year prison sentence when a firearm is involved. And this case just doesn't deserve it. This is a case where, first, let's talk about durational departure, because that one deals with the role of the defendant. It was a minor role. He didn't shoot at them. He didn't hit them. He didn't injure them. He didn't do substantial harm to him. The victim was not a victim, was not injured. The most they did was run away. So as far as his role in the departure issue, it was minor. With regard to dispositional departure, my client has in dispositional departure, you look at the defendant. What's the defendant like? He has no felony offense. There's no finding one way or another on amenability to probation. I wish the probation department had said something about that. And he cooperated with the police all the way through. In fact, he thought he was right rather than the other side being right. I thought that the determination of the court on either of these dispositional or durational departures was very thin, that the court may even consider sending this back to the court for an indication of why specifically he thought that what I've just been saying was wrong. This guy shouldn't have gone to prison.
Did you get a transcript of the sentencing hearing?
I didn't find it, but I may be wrong. And a departure motion was made. It was virtually an incompetent motion, but it was a motion. And therefore, the issue should have been before the court. And more importantly, perhaps, the issue should have been before probation. Because when the PSI is written and you have a motion for a departure one way or the other, frankly, probation is supposed to deal with it. In this case, I think they didn't deal with it. I don't think the court dealt with it. And I think that if the court does not agree with me with regard to issue one, circumstantial evidence, it should send back to the district court for a determination with regard to sentencing. I'll take questions.
Any other questions from the panel? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mack. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Morning, Your Honors. Ed Stockmeyer, Assistant Attorney General, appearing for the state of Minnesota. I guess I'll start with just addressing a couple points about the sentencing issue, mostly so that I don't forget to address them. So counsel's first argument on the durational departure was that the defendant played a minor role in the crime because he didn't shoot at the victims and the victims were uninjured. But that's the nature of an assault fear. The victims are uninjured and you're not trying to injure them, but you do something to make them, intentionally make them experience subjective fear of bodily harm. And I don't see how the defendant could be deemed to have played a minor role when he's the one who pulled the trigger on the gun. He's the only person involved in this crime. So I don't see how he could have played a minor role. On the dispositional argument, counsel argued that there was no finding on amenability, but we actually don't know that to be the case at all. There is no transcript of the sentencing hearing in the record. The district court's, any finding that the district court made on amenability to probation would have occurred at the sentencing hearing from the bench, and there is no transcript of the sentencing hearing. I've cited all the case law in our brief that it is the appellant's obligation to order the record necessary for appellate review, and really this case comes down to this court doesn't have the record it needs to conduct any sort of meaningful review of whether the district court exercised its discretion in imposing the presumptive sentence.
Counsel, you would agree that the district court, when it imposes the presumptive sentence, doesn't have to give an explanation as to why it's imposing the presumptive sentence. Case law establishes that.
I agree, Your Honor. And I think that goes to further my argument, because really in these types of appeals where you're challenging the imposition of the presumptive sentence, the appellant has to demonstrate that the district court failed to consider an actual substantial basis for a departure. And you just cannot do that without a record. You can't show that the district court failed to do something if there is no record. So the district court doesn't have to explain itself. The appellant's burden is to show a failure to consider a known compelling reason, and we just can't conduct that review. Moving on to the sufficiency argument. So just to review the facts, appellant was mad or frustrated with the victims. He went inside to grab his shotgun. He came back outside. He fired his shotgun in the air, and then he brandished or waved it around for a moment. Now, appellant argues that he was merely trying to get their attention. But the point I want to make about that argument is that appellant never actually finishes that thought. The defendant wanted to get their attention for what? To what end? And there's really only two possible answers to that question. The first is that he wanted to get their attention to speak with them. But that's just not a reasonable inference to draw on these facts. If the defendant wanted to speak with the victims, he merely would have crossed the 50 feet of his yard to go and speak with them. So that possibility.
What about the fact that the appellant's argument that there was a tractor running and it was loud. So that was a reasonable way to get their attention.
Your Honor, the noise of the tractor may have interfered with the defendant's ability to call to them from a distance, but it absolutely would not have interfered with his ability to just cross his own yard and speak with them. I'd also point out that the noise of the tractor didn't seem to prevent the prior conversation with father, which appears to be one of the things that precipitated the assault. So we know they were able to speak to each other. Appellant just elected not to speak with them. So I just think it's unreasonable to say that the purpose of getting their attention was to merely speak with them. That's just not a reasonable inference from these facts. So that leaves the only other alternative inference is that appellant wanted to get their attention in order to scare them off the property, to get them to stop loading his wood and get off the property. But shooting a gun only accomplishes that purpose by virtue of causing fear in the people you're interacting with. They're going to leave the property because they are fearful for their physical safety as a result of the gunshot. So that's just merely another way of describing appellant's guilty intent. He wanted the victims to be so apprehensive of their immediate physical safety that they would leave the property, stop loading the wood. And that's just an assault fear. And on this point, I would direct the court to State versus Marzak. It's an unpublished decision cited in my brief. And here's what this court said in response to virtually an identical argument. If appellant's intent in firing the rifle in any direction was to make the trespassers afraid so that they would leave his property, then the only rational inference is that he intended them to fear that they would be hit with a bullet immediately if they did not leave. So that's the exact holding we're asking for in this case, that's the only reasonable inference is that this was an assault fear, because the only thing appellant could have intended is for the victims to fear that the next shot would be directed at them. And unless there are any further questions, we simply just ask this court to affirm the conviction and to affirm the sentence. Thank you.
Any further questions from the panel? Mr. Mack, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
There's no evidence in the record, however, that my client wanted to get them out of the property. He wanted to have them stop loading some of the wood because he thought they were stealing it. There's no indication, too, that getting them off the property would accomplish this. Getting them off the property, as a matter of fact, would probably create problems for him. But the big thing is there was no testimony from either the victims or from my client that he wanted them off the property. What he wanted them to do is to listen to him. He could have gone to the tractor. He probably should have gone to the tractor, which is why he maybe should have been charged with 609.66. But the question is whether his object was to cause fear in them rather than attention. And the evidence on this, I submit, is non-existent, except for my client's statement that what he wanted to do was to cause them to listen to him, to stop what they were doing, and not to load more wood that he thinks they were attempting to steal. Now, Mr. Stockmeyer says, well, he could have gone up there to talk to them too. First, the tractor noise is a problem because he's on his steps. But the other thing is, he was mad at them, and they were probably mad at him, too. He goes up to them to speak, especially if he goes up to them to speak with a gun in his hand. It's probably going to be more frightening than having shot it into the air. It should be noticed that they didn't await a second shot. This is a single-shot shotgun, and there was no second shot. So it was a reasonable hypothesis that he wanted to get them in a position where they heard them, where he could speak to them from a distance without any problem with actually having an assault physically. And it was a reasonable hypothesis. Because it was a reasonable hypothesis, the jury should have been able to consider it. And this court, based upon Harris and Fox, should remand for a new trial. Thank you. Questions?
No, sorry, I don't see any further questions from the panel. So thank you to both counsel for your arguments here today. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe.